All right, welcome to this week's episode of Under the Influence, which really has so many meanings. There was meant to be an episode with another guest, I guess at this point, what, 2 weeks ago? And there was a scheduling issue, and then I had some other things going on. So here we are. We are back, and I have Kenzie with me, of all people. Kenzie, how did you find your way here?
I honestly don't even know, but I'm happy to be here.
Well, I'm happy to have you. It's nice to kind of, you know, I actually recorded this podcast twice, and there were technical issues. I've been battling so much technology. But it's nice to have somebody there. You just don't feel like you're talking into the ether, and then it's sort of like, oh, should I go back and listen and edit it out? But I feel like if I'm talking to somebody, it's a little bit easier to get to a point and then move on, as opposed to sitting in a dark room by yourself and just talking into a microphone and hoping it all makes sense. So I don't know how you found your way here, but I'm also glad you're here.
Yeah, I mean, I feel like it kind of gets more organic when you talk to somebody else and, you know, you have different perspectives. So looking forward to it.
Well, I wanted to originally the idea, and I thought the name was clever, and I implemented the name and then looked and saw how many podcasts use the name. But the idea was to interview every week a different content creator and kind of get under the hood of their process. I'm very fascinated by process. But trying to get somebody every week while I'm streaming, it wasn't the kind of thing where I was going to pre-record a bunch of episodes. That would be logical. But I like the real time checking in every week. There's something different about that than, you know, hey, let me get 6 interviews in the can and release them. Different format. So I thought it would be fun to do that, but then I found myself getting frustrated with myself constantly pestering people to be guests, to the point, Kenzie, that I was reaching out, and I'm not going to put them on blast. Maybe I will if you force me to, but I was asking people to be guests that I didn't even want to interview.
I mean, sometimes even if you don't want to interview them, they might have really, you know, interesting things to say, and other people might enjoy it, you know? But I hear what you're saying. I think, you know, this is going to be a little bit of a different take than what people are used to seeing with the last few episodes, but I like the mix.
Well, I like the idea of getting these guests to come on and interview them when we can. But like you said, it's organic. So let the show evolve. I'd love to be able to do this, you know, and these aren't going to be long episodes, but I'd love to be able to do this weekly. You know, we've, with your help, Kenzie, have tried to accomplish so much in this last year. And I've learned so much, but I have so many questions and I still kind of feel imposter syndrome. So I'm kind of still trying to figure out what this whole influencer thing is about, because I don't know. Like, despite 3.5 years of being in it, I don't feel like I belong, you know?
Yeah. I mean, I don't think there's, you know, guidelines on how to be the perfect influencer. I think everybody has their own niche. And I know we've talked about this before. So, you know, you don't come up with it overnight. Like you said, it evolves. So, you know, it's been fun to be on this ride for, you know, a few years, seeing the channel evolve. So I think this is just like another iteration of it. And like you said, this part will evolve too. So it might turn into something that you weren't expecting from the beginning, and I think that's okay, you know. You just figure it out as you go. And when it comes to, you know, the imposter syndrome, again, I don't think there's like a specific way that you're supposed to be doing things, but I think having feedback from, you know, your viewers and having different ideas float through is how you get to a certain point. But yeah, I think it just, you just go with it.
Well, so I could respond to so many things you said, but just going with it was the common thread from the two women that I spoke with in episodes 1 and 2. And Eugenia, who has been doing this for a decade and a half, has just gotten to the point, she's like, whatever, I just do whatever. And I think for me, these last few weeks where I haven't been live have been very much that I have to do whatever thing. Because if I listed right now to you everything that I've accomplished in the last couple of weeks, not including just having time to decompress and theorize and brainstorm on the future, you know, but the things that I've actually had time to accomplish because I've given myself the time, it's like you feel like, or at least I do, when you're streaming as much as I do and have been for 3.5 years, like a hamster on a wheel and you can't get off. So
Yeah,
for,
I mean,
you know,
go ahead.
no, I was gonna say for me, these past couple of weeks has been very much sort of following my own sort of internal desire, clock, whatever you want to call it, pursuit, to the point that I'm ready to put my head through a wall, but hence those videos I put out today. But that's a whole nother story. But it's just it's one of these things where I feel like I'm always trying to learn new things. So I love that I have this TikTok live thing, but I'm like, oh, I've always been trying to experiment with the 360 camera and gaming and all these different things. And I have ideas, and I've always got ideas on how to do new things, but I'm trying to keep it fresh because after 3.5 years, I always have that fear of things getting stagnant. And then I also don't want to have all my eggs in one basket with TikTok. But then I also want to, it just, there's a lot, man. There's a lot. I don't mean to call you man, but there's a lot. There's a lot,
No.
Kens.
Yeah, I mean, I feel like you said so many things. You know, first it was me and now it was you. But you know, I think a lot of people assume that change happens overnight. I feel like, you know, you're live Monday through Friday, 9 to 5, and then occasionally some sprinkled lives in here and there. But I feel like there comes a point when you need time to reflect and, like you said, brainstorm and think about other things to do besides TikTok. We don't know where TikTok's going to be in the future. And, you know, we know that there's so many other social media platforms out there. There's so many different ways to, you know, grow your channel. So I feel like sometimes having a break is needed just to take a step back. You know, you can't do it in a weekend. So when you take that, you know, the week or two, and I mean, it's like every other job. You know, people take PTO, people need breaks, they need vacations. It just, you need a moment to reflect and rethink the direction that you're going in. I think to all the corporations and companies that have, you know, their little mid-year in review, or they have some type of conference where they take a look at where they were in the last year, whether it's financially or operations. So I feel like having this kind of break for your one-man show is needed, and I think it's completely justified. I just, people probably don't realize it because you're showing what's happening live on camera and not the behind the scenes.
Well, but then, and part of that too is, you know, I'm all about diversifying the platforms because when I started, as you know, I was doing 7 days a week and all TikTok, 12, 15 hours a day. To get to the point that I was even comfortable not being live on the weekends was huge for me. Huge. Okay. Because you're like, you're trying to navigate. What is this thing? Will they be there tomorrow? And from a TikTok perspective, like honestly, if it went away tomorrow, I wouldn't even care. I'm so thankful for what it's given me, but I think TikTok is more nonsense than good at this point in the equation. So I you know, look, I wish in many ways that my other platforms, it's funny, people say, what are you going to do? What are you going to do if TikTok goes away? Like, where are you going to go? I'm like, well, I'm already on these other platforms. You're not following me there. But I'm on Instagram and YouTube. So if TikTok goes away, you just pop up where you pop up. But I don't have 600,000 people following me on those platforms. That's what fascinated me about talking to Eugenia, because after 15 years, 14 and a half years, she's carried audience from platform to platform to platform.
Yeah, and you don't really know, you know, it, let's say that something happens with TikTok down the road. You don't know what the platform is going to be when that time comes around. It's always changing. It's always evolving. So, you know, I feel like she probably at the time realized that TikTok was booming and it was the place to drive her channel, but I don't think that's anything that you can predict, you know?
I was going to pray for TikTok to go away, but I don't know. Is that too much?
I mean, I would be devastated, but I also am on the other end of it.
Dear Lord, if you're listening, I would, no, I just, it's more like for me, I having lost the business before, I don't fear it. That's the entrepreneur in me. You just pick up and keep moving. And also that comes with having success on the platform too. I'm not at the point where I'm still trying to figure it out. Like I've had pretty good success on the platform, but I also feel like that success is based off of the audience's support. And yep. Then moving to another platform like YouTube, which is more ad-driven, is a whole other ball of wax. And there is a rebuild to be had there. And if that's what I'm doing, that's what I'm doing. I don't know if I'd even commit to doing that if TikTok went away. I don't know what I would do if TikTok went away. I just don't fear the idea of it going away. And in many ways, I think TikTok's dirty. If I'm being completely transparent, I think they're dirty.
Yeah, I mean, we've seen how many different like iterations of battles and live fests and gifts and all that, like all the different like fluff. I call it fluff because when you like come onto some lives, I feel like it's in your face with this competition and this promo. And yeah, you just don't see that on a lot of the other social media platforms. And I get it because, you know, you said that YouTube is very ad based and TikTok doesn't necessarily have that on live streams. You know, you'll have an ad when you're scrolling through your FYP, but it just feels like there's a lot of forced fluff that comes with some of the live streams. Well, just from what I've noticed.
I didn't touch that stuff in the early days. I didn't even think it was worthwhile. And then yeah. I had a conversation with a different creator, not the one that I was talking about earlier, but a different creator who educated me. And I've talked about who it is before. I'm just not going to, at this point, there's no point in naming names. So save that for next week. So I started to see that the gamification in the app was really a good way of also creating a structure to make sure that you get your rate. Because running around every single day, I'm trying to get paid. I'm not trying to do it for free.
Yeah.
You know, so I embraced it for that structure. But it's the battling and the shop. And by the way, side note, the only reason you see me doing these TikTok shop videos, Kenzie, and I just keep it real, it's because they send me free stuff. So I'm just like, send me these free, really expensive things, and I'll make a dumb video, and then I get really cool free stuff. Who wouldn't? I'm not doing it because I'm trying to sell stuff on TikTok. I'm doing it because it's like you just sent me an electric cooler.
Yeah, I mean, like you said, it's, you know, you're not doing this for free. You monetize off of this channel, and this is your job.
I'm trying to get an espresso machine. Like, I literally keep applying to get a free. So if you see a video on TikTok of me with an espresso machine, just know I got my free espresso machine.
I mean, next you're going to get a car. Like, what are they handing out on these TikTok shops?
I applied for a bounce house. And I was like, what happens if they send
that?
I don't know. I was like, what happens if they, like, send it? Like, what if it gets approved? Because it has to be approved, you know? And then I was thinking, like, this is where my brain goes. I'm like, what are the logistics of executing a bounce house setup on Disney property to shoot the video, strike it, and get off property before they find you? Back road field could I do that on, you know?
Right. It has to be like on like this, what's the abandoned island in the middle of
Right, yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
Discovery Island.
Yeah.
Or I'm just like, I'm just sort of like behind the rainforest cafe at Animal Kingdom by the bar where nobody goes. And I just have this bounce house set up. They'd probably be cool with it.
Yeah, they probably would. They'd be like, we're not even going to argue this. This is kind of brilliant. So. Well,
this is the most exciting thing we've seen at Rainforest Cafe in a long time.
Right.
So I guess inadvertently, I just answered where I've been, you know. And the funny thing is, you know, talking about taking time off, I get in a cycle, and you know, it becomes a regimen. So you do your thing, and you wake up, and you do it again, and you don't stop. And yes, I've taken weekends to be able to have time to figure out other things, but I guess it was 2 weeks ago at this point, maybe even longer. I ate something. I'm telling you, I got like mild food poisoning. So I had a couple days off. And then it was like Friday and I was feeling fine. But I was like, it's Friday. I don't really want to go run around in the heat. Like, I've been getting stuff done. I've been getting all these arcade games fixed, you know, and it hasn't even taken a lot of time. It just takes time to figure out what's wrong with them. And then the fix is quick. But it's just sort of like I found my time. I was really enjoying my time.
Monday. Yeah, I mean, you should. You Monday through Friday, you're streaming, and then, you know, you have weekends and then nights, too, like, after streaming sometimes. But, you know, it, like I said, there comes a time when you need some of that PTO that people get with real jobs. I don't think they realize the amount of work that goes into doing this every day. It's not like sitting at your desk all day.
But there's no PTO. It's a loss. Like, every week that I've been off is a complete loss.
Yeah.
You know?
But, I mean, that just goes to show that, you know, like, what's important to you for the channel. And I think, you know, you have been busy. And I think people just don't realize it. They've, you know, been asking, whether it's in the Discord or in comments on the videos and things like that. But I just, yeah, I wonder what people think that you're doing with this time.
Listen, TV shows take hiatus. Like, you need time. And I look at what I do probably a lot differently than most of the folks that also attempt to do what I do in the parks. Okay. Mm-hmm. I hyperanalyze things. It's audience first. I'm always trying to figure out new things, but I'm very cognizant of what the main thing is. But I need time, and time is money. So unfortunately, while I've been gone these last couple of weeks at a financial detriment, I've been kind of road mapping for the future of the channel. So where, like, I'm just not a, what am I supposed to do? Like, A, I didn't know that I'd be doing this long, you know, particularly once I got to this capture nightmare, this iPad Elgato thing that haunts me. But I'm not like, what, you know what I mean? Like, I didn't know how much time I was going to take off, and I can't be one of these content creator influencers, whatever I'm supposed to be, that makes big dramatic announcement. I know that's what people want. But, like, in other words, folks, I've decided that I'm going to take the next 3 weeks off to focus internally on the future of this channel. You know, like, I just can't do that. That's cringy. In my mind, yeah, who cares?
Right. It almost feels like forced a little bit, you know, when people put out these dramatic statements and messages on what they're, you know, what they're up to. It's kind of like breaking through that wall in a very inappropriate way sometimes, to, you know, be so aggressive with, where are you? Where have you been? You know, and I get when people say it from a point of, oh, I just miss seeing the lives. You know, this is something that I'm used to seeing Monday through Friday when I'm at my desk working. You know, I can say that from my end as a viewer. But there has to be a level of respect in your privacy and, you know, understanding that you're taking the time to do what you feel is right.
But again, the name of the show is Under the Influence. And the idea of this show was to understand other people's process and to learn from it. And looking at a variety of streamers, and I'm not even talking Disney stuff, I'm talking these IRL Twitch streamers that are out there. I mean, they're out there all day, every day, okay? These bigger names, like, I could name these names, you wouldn't even know who I'm talking about. But they're out there every day, generally have a camera guy at this point, okay, following them around. You're talking millions upon millions of followers, right?
Mm-hmm.
And it's like sometimes they're running around, they're doing stunts. Sometimes they're just sitting in front of their computer and they're not even gaming, they're just talking. And I'm like, is that really like the goal? Like, that's like, do you really want to be one of those? Like, they're a menace to society. You know? So you question yourself. You look at that and you go, okay, well, that's the natural, you know, I got 660,000 followers, give or take. That is nothing compared to these actual content creators that have millions and millions of followers. And I love it when people say, hey, Royce, I love your lives. I love your content. I love your lives. My lives aren't content. It's not my content. It's Disney's content. Somebody tried to troll me the other day, Kenzie, on a live and say, look at your numbers when you're doing Legos. They're, you know, only in the parks do you have real numbers. And I was like, yeah, because that's what people want. He goes, so you're using your live as you're using Disney as a backdrop. Disney live streamers are using their live as a backdrop. Correct. That's not a
Right,
troll. That's an
yeah.
accurate statement.
Yeah.
So, and then I'll defer to you. If that's the case, then you look at the evolution of what you're doing and you go, okay, so am I really just doing IRL, which is in real life? And if Disney is just the backdrop, then at some point people are there for you, not just the backdrop. So where do you go beyond TikTok and Disney? Who's gonna follow you? Okay, but then to my point, even if that's the road you're going down, where it's going, do you really want to go there? Even if people are going to follow you there, do you really want to wind up being a Kai Cenat? Who's Kai Cenat? Don't worry about it.
I was just gonna say, I'm like silent over here. I have no idea.
You know, but
yeah, go ahead.
these guys are making millions of dollars doing IRL streaming. And I just don't
I've actually.
see that being my exit. Not an exit, but I don't see that being my sort of next, you know, chapter.
Yeah, I actually have never heard of the term like IRL streaming, but I do find it interesting, you know, when people make comments like that because, you know, like the name of the channel is Disney Parks DIY, right? Like, you know, mainly what you're going to expect when you turn on a live stream and see you at the park. And then when you come in and see streams of Legos and gaming, it's a little bit different, but that's not necessarily a bad thing, right? You know, I think you have always said that you've wanted to branch outside of the park. You know, what does that look like? But I think it's been fun to follow as a viewer. And you know, we did that survey about, I feel like it was like 6 months ago, just to get feedback from some people on how things are going, because I think you take your interest into account, but you also take your viewers' interest into account. And although your stream or your channel name is Disney Parks DIY, that doesn't mean that you can't expand in other areas, because if people are interested in it and if people, you know, enjoy your perspective on things, then they will follow the channel, then they will enjoy the content that's coming out. And I think we keep saying it's evolving, but it really is. And I think there's always new things to explore. You know, you went to Jamaica for a weekend. That was awesome. And you know, you went to Tokyo last year, and who knows what's next.
But
But I
to
think.
be fair, these are not fully sustainable. Those are actually, from a business perspective, loss leaders.
Okay.
Well, I'm just saying, you because people show up for Disney, and I don't even do the DIY stuff, but people don't question that, right? They don't care. They're here for the parks. They want Disney. And if I'm home doing something that's not in the park, I try to keep it Disney centric, you know, because it just seems to make sense. But at the end of the day, if Disney banned live streaming, okay, forget TikTok for a second. If Disney banned live streaming and I went live tomorrow, you know, the day after, would people say, we don't want to watch anymore because you're not in the park? Or would they say, hey, we're here for what's next?
I mean, I feel like you would get a mix, you know? I think there's people that follow just to see the parks because that's the name that comes with the channel and it's the obvious.
But then, so let me ask you this then. So if you are saying that in a situation where Disney banned live streaming, the Disney content might be as, if not more, and I believe it to be more valuable than the Royce content, the individual content creator's content, then one could almost extrapolate from that that doing pre-produced Disney content, if lives were banned, would make more logical sense than doing lives that weren't Disney related.
Interesting.
See, this is what I'm talking about. I put way too much thought into this stuff because what?
Yeah, I'm like stuck in this.
But do you see what my point is there? Because if people really, if the bulk of the people really are there for Disney and not there for you, and they take away the broadcasting, okay, which is essentially all live streaming is, they take away your ability to broadcast from the park. I could broadcast from home like this. The reason I love radio so much, what we're doing, there's no chat distracting me. But if everything went away with streaming in the park and I said, hey, we're going to sit here and talk like this, the numbers wouldn't be there because that's not what people want. They want more Disney than they want myself or any other individual who's presenting it, right?
Well, I'm going to counter that because I think you know, if you look at these IRL streamers or however they come across, they use platforms like, you know, gaming. So let's say that there's a Fortnite streamer out there that has these millions of followers. If Fortnite went away, then what would they have? You know, I think that, like, to quote whoever that was, that Disney is a backdrop. I would say Fortnite is a backdrop in that case too, you know, but I think the reason that people follow this channel and that channel and everybody else's channel is because of your perspective on things. So I don't know. I feel like it's bigger than just enjoying the rides because there's a lot of in between time and there's a lot of dialogue and interactions with the community that come with the channel. So I think it goes beyond the Disney content.
Well, I guess time will tell, right? I mean, that's where the imposter syndrome comes from. It's because it's all of these pieces, right? It's the monetization method. It's the niche that is Disney. You know, like I said, people tell me, "Oh, I love your lives. I love your content." Well, my content, somebody else could stream it without talking and you would love it just as much, if not more. It's not me. It's Disney. You know? So those are the things I question. And then I look at that and I go, oh, well, you know, you got this thing going on TikTok, but it's not as strong on Instagram or YouTube. So you don't really have, you really aren't an influencer. And you're not really a content creator because any of the videos that I post, generally speaking, are junk. You know, the videos that I started my TikTok channel off with were quality, but each video took a week to produce.
Mm-hmm.
So I digress.
Yeah, I mean, I feel like most videos that come out nowadays, if it's related to, you know, the parks or I don't know, anything of that nature, it's a quick, like, hey, let's check this out. And it's a quick, like, you know, 10-second clip on something that's new or engaging, and it's not as much of like a production, like you said with your earlier videos. But I want to believe that most people, you know, when they say that they love your content, I think about, you know, you do have a handful of videos that come out once in a while, and I think like those food reviews lately have been really interesting. I think that was a lot of feedback that came out of that survey.
Right.
So you know, you're tailoring your content to what people have been asking for. So I think, you know, that's a way to keep your, you know, your followers engaged and satisfied with the content that comes out when you're not live streaming. You know,
well,
it's kind of like that.
They'll never be satisfied. I mean, let's be honest. You post a new video and they'll complain that it's a video notification, not a live notification.
Well, you have 660,000 followers, whatever. Like, you can't make everybody happy, right?
I know, but that's why I say, like, who wants a million?
Yeah, no kidding. But yeah, I mean, I feel like, you know, when you have a social media account, you just have different priorities. Streaming is your number one priority and content is behind that and everything else. Like Instagram are mostly food pictures or
I don't even think I had Instagram for like the first 8 months of live streaming because I didn't want one.
I don't think you did either. Yeah.
So there's a huge, huge like, you know, deficit there because I didn't think I'd be doing this long. You know, I really didn't. So it's not that I feel stuck with it, but I definitely look at the writing on the wall between Disney and TikTok and go, well, what is next? And that is what this pursuit of technology has been for me lately, just to create a new array of things to be able to do. And I don't want to talk about them in detail with the audience because now I almost name drop people in the audience. That would have been horrible.
Please don't do that.
No, because they're like, this one will be like, oh, well, did you try this? And I'd be like, you don't even know what I'm talking about. Why are you giving me a suggestion?
Well, I mean, I'm sure it's to be helpful, but like having this hiatus is distraction free, right? So, you know, you have time and energy that you can dedicate towards the next step.
Pouring Gatorade into a USB-C port isn't going to solve anything. Okay? But, you know, going back to what you said about the food thing and the survey, everything is so social. You know, they call it social media. That's a given, right? But it's social. And, like, if you're not having a conversation with your audience and if you're not actually facilitating that conversation and actually trying to listen, then is it really a social circle? I don't want to just be, you know, I use the term broadcast to describe it, but it's what makes it different than a broadcast is that it's a two-way street. You know,
I
think of it as radio, but radio has phone callers. We don't have phone callers. You have a bunch of people in the comments. Okay. And they're the ones you're talking to every single day. So I just find it for me that, like, if you're not listening to the audience in terms of what works for the audience or what isn't working for the audience, and you're just, I get doing what works for you and they will follow. I get that principle. But if you're not trying to sort of, which is why I love the survey, if you're not trying to learn from your audience and take that feedback and run with it, then I don't know if you're really taking it seriously. You know, I mean,
right.
Do you know how many creators don't look at their analytics? I have this conversation with people all the time. I mean, the amount of information the app gives me about my viewers. And you can use that as a tool set to create content. So, oh, my viewers are interested in videos like this, topics like this. Oh, my viewers are listening to songs like this. Oh, my viewers are active at this time of day. And using all of those, and I don't even use them half the time. But using all those tools is where you're going to find success on the platform. You know? And I just question how many people just go out there and turn the phone on and just let it rip and then go home. And I'm like, I got the producer hat on. And then when I'm live, I got the hosting hat on, you know what I mean? And then I got to make a video and I'm editing. And it's a lot. Like you said, it's a one-man show. But I think if you truly are a social media content creator, then you have to be receptive to the audience experience. It's imperative.
Well, yeah, because otherwise, what is this all for? You know,
a lot of people do it for themselves. Well,
but yeah, but what's the point? You know, if you do it for yourself, then you're not going to grow and get anywhere.
Correct. It's not viable. So, you know, again, these are all things in the pursuit of growth. And I know it's just turned into a big complaining session, but much easier to do it with somebody on the other end.
No, I wouldn't say it's complaining. I think it's just diving into, you know, your process. All these podcasts are looking at other people's process, but, you know, you have your own process and the way that you like to do things. And obviously it worked for you with 660,000 followers, give or take. But I think everybody just has their own way of doing things. And I think having your perspective on this hiatus that you've taken and having people understand the value in it for the growth of the channel and growing, you know, getting outside of your comfort zone, getting outside of you know, that box that is Disney and the parks with live streaming is really crucial for your followers to understand and being able to see this side of you, because, you know, you don't talk about behind the scenes a lot when you're on your live streams. And I think people are curious about that.
Well, look, I've been pursuing a stream key for over a year. Okay, whenever we do Fortnite streams, I have the phone on a tripod pointed at the TV. Drives my OCD up a wall because the TV never looks level in the shot. So I'm always looking at sort of the line of the bezel. And whatever. So and also it's not good for the algorithm.
Right.
Stream key gives you the ability to basically send a signal straight in, like, you know, you would see on any other platform. But TikTok doesn't want you to have one. They want you to use TikTok's PC software. We would really like it, Royce, if you would try using TikTok's PC software first. If that doesn't work, let us know. That was 6 months ago. I literally bought a cheapo PC laptop to try to do it because I have everything else, right?
Right.
It was trash. I got a free desk the other day off of the TikTok shop. I set it up. I put up all my iMac and all my stuff and my old capture devices, and I finally got it running. And it took forever. It took forever. 30 some attempts at pinging the server. There's no manual. There's no instruction book. They don't want you to use it, so no one at TikTok is going to help you. The only thing TikTok's going to help you with,
making it as difficult as possible.
Yeah, exactly. And then telling you if you don't use it enough, they're going to take it away. So I'm also racing the clock to be able to use this thing. And I want to be able to travel with it and be able to stream games and be able to be like, look, we're here doing this and now we're over here. So I wanted this versatility. Okay, I had my desktop battle station and my mobile station, and I was working through it, and I got the stream key, but now the clock is ticking, and I'm just dealing with all these different fires. And I have to just say, as a Mac user, as an Apple user, and you can say what you want, but I've been doing video editing since I'm like 12 years old. When things went digital, nobody ever took the time to support Apple. Okay,
yeah.
From the days of Final Cut Pro and on, how many capture devices have I bought over the years that will work flawlessly on a PC, are quote-unquote Mac-supported, and never work, and the companies don't support them? And I am just, it drives me up a wall. So the last few days, I've been fighting the stream key and then the Elgato capture device because I went to TikTok VidCon, which, again, great experience. But, like, all of this, Kenzie, is smoke and mirrors. Okay, you want to talk about under the influence? It's all smoke and mirrors because TikTok's not going to support it. They're not going to support me with the stream key. Elgato's not supporting the capture device. Why am I at VidCon? Why is Elgato at VidCon? Elgato is just trying to pretend like they're doing something and probably spending money in their budget so that they can keep the budget for next year. VidCon is a dying brand that Paramount owns, and they don't know why, okay? And TikTok just wants you to battle so you can send your hard-earned money to the Chinese Communist Party, period. That's the truth. And if you want to talk about influence, Kenzie, the whole world, you know, I've been watching so much news in my downtime, and I love... I really do love the news and I love politics, even when they're both broken, okay? Because I really do like the idea of trying to improve the world, okay? And that's another reason I battle with all of this, because TikTok Lives and Disney is so superficial. All right.
Right.
But let me tell you something. Bubble. But let me tell you something about influence when you get outside that bubble, okay? there are only so many people at the top. There are only so many people at the top. And you could pick any company, you could pick any story in history, and the lines can be drawn. Whether it's this stuff going on with P. Diddy or Michael Jackson or, you know, Microsoft or Amazon or stuff going on in Washington, D.C., it's the same guys. They're there every single time. Every
right.
single time. Billionaires at the top controlling everything. That's influence.
And people don't even realize it.
No, you know who Ron Burkle is?
I don't.
Okay, Ron Burkle is one of P. Diddy's financiers, okay? I believe he's the one that bailed him out when Sean John kind of plateaued, all right?
Mm. Yeah.
Ron Burkle, also by happenstance, bought Neverland Ranch for like $21 million when it was supposed to be listed for like $100 million, or I think they listed it at $100 and they couldn't sell it. And he scooped that up from a good buddy of his named Tom Barrick, okay, at Colony Capital. Okay, Colony Capital, who was able to pick up the phone and call the Saudi prince, okay, or the Prince of Bahrain, excuse me, to drop the deal with Michael Jackson, the lawsuit with Michael Jackson, so Michael Jackson could go on tour with AEG or AIG. I can never get them right. I can't get the acronyms right. Okay?
Yeah.
And you want to know who's tied in with this Tom character and Colony Capital? Rob Lowe.
What?
That's what I'm saying. People don't realize all of these names start to connect at the top. Okay?
Yeah.
So what Rob Lowe and Tom Barrick were doing at some point were buying up distressed celebrities and their assets. Okay? So when you want to talk about power and influence and you want to look at what's going on in the world right now, you have to ask yourself, why are things actually happening now? Not why are they happening, why are they happening now?
Right.
Okay. So yeah, I find it very convenient that Ron Burkle shows up in all of these places and is very interested in writing checks wherever he needs to.
Yeah. I mean, I definitely have not been in the loop with all of this, but I mean, it honestly seems like it's crazy how connected everything is and you know, everything that comes out, you're just like, who is at the top of this, driving this? How did this all get unfolded? There's always a backstory.
Always. And you know, that was a very, very condensed diatribe. I could peel back that curtain, and I've done it and produced podcasts for other people over the years where we've really, excuse me, I hit the mic, where we've really broken that down. But what I will tell you, and I wasn't a Michael Jackson fan growing up, and I'm not sitting here to defend Michael Jackson, but I'm going to tell you right now that Michael Jackson was worth more dead than alive. And if you don't believe me, go research the Sony ATV catalog.
Interesting.
Michael Jackson sat across from Paul McCartney back in the day, and Paul McCartney educated him on music publishing. And Paul McCartney told Michael Jackson, music publishing is where it's at. Michael Jackson's response was, ha ha ha, maybe one day I'll own your songs. Michael Jackson goes out and purchases the Beatles catalog. Paul McCartney gets pissed. Michael Jackson grows that catalog. At the time of his death, Michael Jackson owned half of the Sony ATV catalog. And I think he wanted something like $750 million, or maybe he didn't even want $750. Maybe they were offering it, and he wouldn't give it to them. And he was publicly battling with Tommy Mottola. Michael Jackson winds up dead, and his estate sells that other half of the Sony ATV catalog back to Sony for like pennies on the dollar.
Jeez.
So, you know, and then again, Rob Lowe, Tom Barrick, you know, were trying to help Michael Jackson out when he was alive. Okay. And I know people are going to go, how did we get to this? But I'm talking about influence for a second. And social media is the new television. But film and television and the music industry, these industries are highly corrupt. So the stuff that's coming out now is not new. So my point getting to all this is they were there to try to help him out. Okay. But if you look at all the relationships they had, all right, like you question whether they were there to help him or they were there to help themselves. deals, because they are the ones that facilitated these deals. They're the ones that got, I think it's an AEG or AIG? AEG, right? The concert group?
Oh, I have no idea.
One's AEG and then one's insurance. Whatever. It doesn't matter.
So it's Sony ATV.
No, that's Sony ATV. But AIG is the touring company that was going to put Michael Jackson up in the London arena. Was it
AEG? Yeah,
AEG. And then AIG, I think, is whatever. So, you get what I'm trying to say. The E and the I is not the point here. Okay, they contracted the man to do a limited run of shows and then blew his contract up to a level that he could not sustain. There were so many things going on there. And again, I'm not trying to turn this into defending him. I'm just saying that when you take a look back at the people, okay, that are there with the money at the end of these storylines, they're the same people every time.
Driving the show.
Yeah. This Tom Barrett guy has been tied up with the Middle East and all the Saudi princes and all of that. He's had his hands in Washington politics. I mean, it's the lines are there and the information is public, but people don't know. So this stuff going on with Diddy right now, I guarantee you it has nothing to do with anything that P. Diddy did, and everything to do with the tapes that he is holding. He was allowed, he didn't, first of all, he was allowed to do everything he did. You know what I mean? And by the way, who was one of his biggest mentors? Clive Davis. Go Google Clive Davis and Ron Burkle. It's all connected.
You think it had nothing to do with what he did, though?
Well, this goes back to questioning the timing of it.
Okay, yeah, I was going to say.
because they're all doing it. You understand? They're all doing it.
Yeah.
Listen, I could name check a very, very well-known Hollywood director who is now a CEO at a very major studio and is directing a very popular movie that's coming out next summer.
Mm-hmm.
And everything he's been accused of in the past is true. I've seen the photos. I know people who were at the parties. And I go on Twitter, and it's all speculative.
Right.
But I know for a fact. And when I heard it, I was disgusted by it.
Yeah.
But this guy is, this guy is one of the biggest names in town right now. And everyone knows what he's up to. So my point with the stuff with P. Diddy is they're not coming after him for what he's done. They're coming after him for the information. Either that or he upset the apple cart. If he starts to bite the hand that feeds him, then that's what's going to happen. I'll give you one more quick story. Before Bill Cosby ever got accused of anything publicly, I worked with a woman who was a producer on his show, The Drew Carey Show and The George Lopez Show.
Mm-hmm.
Off the air, I'll tell you where I once met this woman. I don't want to turn this into a. I don't want to inject too much of the P word into this stuff, okay? Because it starts to feed narratives. All right,
right.
But this woman was a decent level executive, an Oscar winner, okay? And she was politically active. Let's just say that, okay?
Okay.
So. Oscar winner, by the way, for a Holocaust documentary, I believe. Absolutely horrible woman to work with. She literally told me once that she couldn't use an iPad because it was too heavy and she had back problems. And then asked us to spreadsheet the paper products in the kitchen to ensure we never ran out of them. And I had so many logistical concerns with that because, I mean, who's constantly updating the inventory? I mean, if 10 forks get used today, how am I supposed to know? I got to go in at the end of the day and count the forks. So it made no sense. She was just a lunatic. Anyway, we're sitting at lunch one day, and kids, cover your ears, that you've been warned. We're sitting at lunch one day, and this is before any of the Bill Cosby stuff was made public. And she was a young female producer on the show. So at this point, she's had a whole storied career of working on all those other shows. And she goes, "I this story's gross, but I shouldn't tell it." And I go, "Well, now you have to." And she goes, and she says this so matter of fact, she goes, "Bill Cosby used to force the production assistants to give him blowjobs."
Oh my gosh.
And she said it like he used to force them to pick up his dry cleaning.
Yeah. And very nonchalant.
Very nonchalant, you know? Oh, so you were privy to all of these things and you didn't do anything about it? And you're telling us all these years later like it's a funny war story?
Yeah.
But you got your Oscar. And you got all that acclaim from Downton Abbey, even though you had nothing to do with producing it. If I say any more, I'll give away her name. So, you know, look, maybe after a few episodes of this, I'll start speaking the truth that I know. But I can just tell you from the things that I've been privy to, these things, they're not going after, they didn't go after Michael Jackson, okay, for child molestation. They used child molestation to go after Michael Jackson. They're not going after P. Diddy for trafficking and all these other crimes. They're going after P. Diddy to protect more powerful people. That's influence. And again, yeah, maybe Michael Jackson did those things. I don't know. I don't know. But at the end of the day, he became a distressed asset. And in this situation, Diddy is the distressed asset. So again, under the influence has a lot of meanings, but as I was sitting here, you know, every time I recorded this thing the last couple weeks, and I was watching the news, and I go, God, man, people don't even know. A quick Google search, they don't even realize that there's just a few names at the top. Go look up Peter Thiel, if I'm even pronouncing his name correctly.
Yeah, and I mean, a lot of this stuff isn't even out there, you know, and advertised because it's the media.
Well, do you remember Rob Blagojevich?
No.
He was the mayor of Chicago, and he got arrested for trying to sell Obama's Senate seat, I believe.
Okay.
He got arrested for quid pro quo. He got arrested for doing everything that everybody else does. It's just the way it works. At that level, everything's acceptable unless you, like I said, you become the problem. You bite the hand that feeds you. You become a distressed asset, you know? So
I'm learning more about, like, I mean, one of my favorite shows of all time is Entourage, you know? And right. Not as much related, but kind of related, where you hear about all of just the dirty, disgusting things that happen behind the movies, behind the TV shows, behind the actors, behind all of these celebrities. It's crazy to hear about all of these things because the media portrays it in one way. And you, in your wildest imagination, never would have expected this.
And you don't even know what you're teeing up right now. Because Entourage is actually based off of Ari Emanuel, the Ari agent character in Entourage.
Yeah.
Ari Emanuel.
I love him.
Ari Emanuel is the biggest agent in Hollywood. When Conan O'Brien got The Tonight Show and then lost it, Ari Emanuel was his agent. Where was Ari Emanuel defending Conan O'Brien? Okay, he didn't, because he wasn't going to fight on behalf of one client at the risk of doing business with hundreds of other clients, most powerful agent in Hollywood.
Yep.
Okay, Conan O'Brien, I think, went to college with his boss at the time, Jeff Zucker. Okay, so there was all this, like, internal stuff going on in that moment. Okay, and the only reason I bring all that up is that was a huge, huge moment in the entertainment industry, and Ari Emanuel is the most powerful agent, and now Ari Emanuel owns the UFC because he's got Ari Emanuel was Endeavor, and then it became William Morris Endeavor Agency, and they acquired the UFC and then the WWE. They're massive. You know who his brother is?
No,
Rahm Emanuel, mayor of Chicago, former chief
who?
of staff to
Oh
Clinton.
my gosh.
Yeah.
Jeez.
The world's connected at the top. That's what I'm saying. You brought up Entourage. You didn't even know what you were doing.
No idea.
I was just talking to you about Blagojevich in Chicago, and you just
Yeah.
brought up the brother of another mayor because that's how t connected it is.
Yeah. Jeez.
There's a third brother. He's a doctor. He's the least successful of the three.
But probably doing the most important thing out of all of
Yeah,
them.
yeah. So it's all connected at the top, you know?
Yeah.
And Ari
That's
Emanuel
wild.
did business with Vince McMahon after all those allegations, you know what I mean? So it's just the way it works.
Yeah.
Anyway, we'll leave it there because again, with the Entourage reference. By the way, did you know I was in an episode of Entourage? Did I ever tell you that?
No.
I'm in
What? When?
the Medellin episode.
Oh my gosh, when they're filming in Colombia?
I'm a Colombian rebel smoking a cigar, running a missile turret on the back of a Jeep.
Stop. Are you serious?
Yeah,
I'm
I'm dead serious.
literally pulling that up after we get off this call.
Yeah. I had a full beard and everything.
Oh, that's too funny.
Yeah. So anyway, listen, thank you for doing this. I think this is actually a great fit. And I love hearing your reactions to stuff like that. And again, that you couldn't have written that, Kenzie. That tee up for Entourage just made the whole point.
Yeah, no, it really did, and I like to stay up to date with things, but like I said, there's only so much that gets, blasted out there. So I feel like I'm a little behind, but not to a fault. So yeah, it's interesting to get your perspective on these kinds of things.
Well, this has been Under the Influence. I hope you'll join me next week, Kenzie. We'll do it again. I'd like the idea of getting guests as we go, but this has been great. Third time's a charm. This has been great. And next week's episode from Tokyo, maybe?
Ooh, I like the idea of
Well, you won't be there. I will.
that. Maybe I'll go. Who knows?
All right. I'll see you there. All right.
Bye.
Thanks, Kenzie. I'll see you all next week, folks. This has been Under the Influence. I appreciate you.